I'd like to call this meeting of the House Transportation Committee to order. It is now 1:03 p.m. on Tuesday, March 17th in room 124. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Members present are Representative St. Clair, Representative Nelson, Representative McCabe, Representative Mina, Co-Chair Eichheit, and myself, Co-Chair Carrick. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business, and please take this time to silence your cell phones. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Jordan Nicholson from House Records and Jude Augustine from the Juno LIO for staffing our committee today, as well as our committee aides, my staff Griffin Sukeo and Meredith Trainer from my co-chair's office. Thank you for your help today. On today's agenda, we are hearing House Joint Resolution 42 from Representative Nelson, taking public testimony, considering amendments, and then looking to the will of the committee. Afterwards, we will have a presentation on deferred maintenance and public facilities at the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Just for members' information, we will have to take a brief pause at 1:30 to switch over the gavel as well. At this time, we do have House Joint Resolution 42 before us. Representative Nelson, do you have any opening comments you'd like to make on the resolution?
I'll close the comments, yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. We're going to go ahead and open public testimony on HJR 42. And I see no one online. Is there anyone in the room to testify on HJR 42? Seeing and hearing none. At this time, we will close public testimony on HJR 42. And the resolution is back before us. We do have one amendment that has come from my office, and at this time I'd like to offer amendment number one, also known as N.1, and I'll just go ahead and object for discussion. Amendment number one, also known as N.1, simply inserts increasing food security on page 2, line 17, following the word goods. This is just adding to a current whereas clause, and the intention is under the listed benefits for the Northern Continental Corridor to just include this benefit because it is a significant priority for the legislature, for our communities, for the executive branch, and just not to increase the scope of this resolution, but just under the listed benefits to include this benefit with it. Is there a discussion on this amendment? Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I appreciate the way that you brought this amendment forward. I think it does fit well within the scope of the bill and the sentiments that we both share, and also the sentiments of that particular whereas. You know, recognizing that there might be challenges moving forward because this is a project that's going to happen predominantly not in Alaska. I recognize and appreciate your efforts to keep it concise but also address the benefits that this would have for our state outside of just a military application and concerns that I have as well. That's my only comment.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Is there any additional discussion on the amendment? Seeing and hearing none, I'm going to remove my objection on Amendment 1. And seeing no further objection, Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. At this time, House Joint Resolution 42, as amended, is before us. Is there any additional discussion on HJR 42? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. Through the co-chair, I have a question related to just the different types of studies that are going to be needed. I know that the resolution is on page 2, line 31, is specifically about funding further analysis and evaluation. So it looks like the last time there was an EIS for the Northern Rail Extension, that was in 2008. Do they need another one, or are there any other type of types of environmental analyses that are required through this resolution?
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. There's absolutely going to have to be more studies done, and those are going to be under the purview of, once again, different entities as far as different provinces in our state and also things in the lower 48. And I will point out, and I apologize for my tardiness in getting you guys the full report, but in that full report, In the end, there are listed, I don't even know how many, but the work that has been going on with this connection goes back to like 1914 as far as historical framework. So there has been a tremendous amount of work done. And a lot of that's going to have to get brushed up, obviously. Things have been out of date. There's going to be permitting required. And so this, once again, what this is asking us to do is just to support the project. The work that has been done will be utilized. There's work that the Alaska Railroad has done on this project and some of the extensions that has been explored in the past. So those things will have to be compiled by the entity that ends up, you know, taking the helm, whether that's people that we've talked to before, whether it's E4M or Dewberry or whoever it might be. There definitely will have to be work done. And this does not preclude or jump over any of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional questions or discussion? Seeing and hearing none, Representative Nelson, do you have any wrap-up comments on HJR 42?
Yeah, I think my wrap-up comments, thank you, Madam Co-Chair, are just this, once again, as we've already discussed, is a unique time for this project to move forward with a unique funding source. This has been explored and pursued in the past. People have tried to do it privately, and so there has been a tremendous amount of work done, and I think in concept is something that everybody absolutely supports. But the goal is, now that we have an administration that is moving forward with these types of projects, we have friends in Alberta that are in support. We have the people that can actually get it done. We have the full support, not just on the concept, but on actually moving forward on laying rail. And so I just would ask you to support this resolution, which does nothing except that we, once again, want this to happen.
Great. Thank you, Representative Nelson. And Representative McCabe?
Thanks. Where does this go afterwards? Does it go right to the floor or finance? Do you know?
I believe, Representative McCabe, that this goes straight to rules.
Yeah, straight to rules. Can you mind if I ask a question? I know it's already done. Wrap up.
Sure. Representative McCabe.
Did I miss it, or did you not intentionally not include the presidential permit that's already granted for this in the resolution?
The one that was referenced earlier? No, it is. I did not include it.
Okay. I wonder if that would be an amendment on the floor to help strengthen this, especially with Canada. That be all right with you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
It was oversight.
I think that's a point very well taken. Since the intention is to move it today, I would state that I'd consider it a friendly floor amendment. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think we could probably see it adopted.
I don't know why I missed that until just now, but
as soon as you said, I was like, you know.
Okay, good catch. At this time, I will look to a motion. Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. I move that HJR 42, Work Order 34-LS1478, / N as in November, be moved from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Object.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
No, ma'am. I just want to be on the record loud and clear supporting my good friend and colleague, Garrett Nelson, in his first resolution passing out of committee.
Thank you.
Is the objection maintained?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. That was unexpected today. So the objection has been maintained loudly and in support. And will the clerk please call the roll on HJR 42?
Representative St. Clair?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative McCabe?
Yes.
Representative Mina?
Yes.
Representative or Co-Chair Eichheit?
Yes.
Co-Chair Carrick?
Yes.
Six, 0 nays.
With a vote of 6 yeas and 0 nays, HJR 42 is moved from the Transportation Committee. We can take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. At ease. House Transportation is back on the record, and now we will move on to our presentation with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on public facilities and deferred maintenance. Today for the presentation, we have Danny Gibson, who's the Director of the Division of Public Facilities, as well as Christopher Hodgin, the Chief of Statewide Public Facilities. Welcome to the House Transportation Committee, both Mr. Hodgin and Mr. Gibson. Feel free to come up to the table, put yourselves on the record, and begin your presentation.
For the record, Danny Gibson, Director of Division of Facility Services, DOT and Public Facilities.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christopher Hodgin. I serve our statewide public facilities team with our Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, and happy St. Patrick's Day. I guess it's all our lucky day today as we get to sit here discussing the Division of Facility Services and our public facilities across this great state. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. And as mentioned, Danny Gibson, Director of Facility Services, with Christopher Hodgins, our Public Facilities Chief. At the Division of Facility Services, our mission is to deliver, improve, and maintain safe and reliable facilities across Alaska. We strive to be the premier facility service provider for Alaskans. We achieve shared goals through strategic collaboration, planning, and continuous improvement. And we leverage experience, technology, and industry best practices to optimize our facilities and make evidence-based decisions. As we deliver our services, we hold our core values of integrity, excellence, respect, service, and safety at the heart of everything we do. In the Division of Facility Services, we have four functional areas of expertise. We have our statewide public facilities team, and that statewide public facilities team is the state's vertical design and construction authority for new facilities, deferred maintenance projects, and energy efficiency retrofit projects. This team of certified engineers delivers facilities projects that include multiple federal and state-funded programs supporting airports, transit, roads, executive branch departments, and much more. We also have our maintenance and operations team, and that multifaceted team of technicians provides preventative and routine maintenance, emergency response, and general repairs for the Department of Transportation and Facilities Services. We have our admin section who support all DFS service deliveries and keep us on the straight and narrow budgetarily and reporting. And we have our leasing group, and our leasing program is responsible for evaluating, negotiating, procuring, managing, and administering leases and contracts for space from private sector and state property owners on behalf of the executive branch. As you can see where we're located, the majority of our division operates out of three major hubs, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. However, if you look at our maintenance and operation positions, they're a bit more strategically placed throughout the state, so that we can get to areas quickly and efficiently to deliver the maintenance program. Taking a look at the Division of Facility Services portfolio as a strategic asset of DOT and PF, DFS owns and operates 706 facilities across 233 locations. And that equates to over $2 billion in assessed building values and over 4.25 million square feet. Taking a look at the graph, what we're depicting here is we have 668 DOT facilities that makes up about half of our square footage. And then we have 38 facilities that are multi-tenant occupied by other agencies that make up the equivalent of the other square footage that we own and operate. To go into a little bit more detail, that 668 facilities is DOT and PF. That could be anything from highway and aviation maintenance stations. It could be SEF maintenance shops. It could be a materials lab, design and engineering, construction. Any program DOT is delivering is going to be housed within one of those facilities, if not a leased facility. When we talk about DFS buildings, we're talking about multi-agency occupied. These are DOT owned, but generally occupied by another executive branch agency. And they pay rent. They have an occupancy agreement, and they pay rent that's based on previous year's actuals. We have the PBF buildings, which are the Public Building Fund facilities. That's 12 buildings, many of them here in Juneau, where similarly, we own and operate them. They pay. There is a rate that is based in prior year's actuals. However, the difference here is that the PBF also pays depreciation on capital projects. Therefore, we have a fund that can be leveraged against PBF buildings to help maintain them and do capital improvement projects.
We have a question here. We go to Co-Chair Eichheit.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. Through the Co-Chair, Mr. Gibson, I'm just trying to recollect some of the presentations we've had in the past here about DOT changing some of its organization. And my recollection is they were going to dispose of some building facilities, I thought, from that. So do you have any more detail on that? Will you know, it sounds like we have some shared buildings, shared spaces. Do you have any information you can add about DOT's reorganization and releasing some buildings or the financial burden of buildings?
Sure, that's a great question. Through the chair, Representative Eichheit, you know, DFS, we're always looking at maximizing our space, maximizing our facilities. That's an exercise we do all the time with through our leasing department. As agencies come and look for space, we're looking to maximize our space within our facilities, and then evaluate those on what's next for that. So we are evaluating that, but that's something we're always doing.
Okay, just follow up. So the slide before us has, you know, numbers in terms of square footage. So that's the current situation, correct? Is that accurate?
To the chair, that's correct. Yep.
Okay. And is it possible to ask Mr. Mills, who's in the room, to add some context to that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mills.
Thank you. For the record, Andy Mills, Special Assistant and Legislative Liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So through the co-chair to the co-chair, for the restructuring that we've talked about in previous hearings for FY27, the context I would add to what Director Gibson has placed is largely what we've talked about in FY27 is what we're going to do when we're having these functional leads. And we've talked about the MATSU office, which is relatively new for DOT, but has been there for a couple of years, and what we could do in the valley that clearly has a need for perhaps some more staff to be up in that area, given the number of projects and initiatives we have going. And we've talked for a number of years about, in earnest the last 2 years, about a Kenai office. I mean, 4 hours to drive from Anchorage down does make sense for and we've actually had an offer to sort of co-locate some staff down there with the borough. And so there are some space utilization changes that we're envisioning. The only building for disposal at this time, and we've confirmed this and spoken to our folks in the other body who had the same question related to the FY27, is the Kubota building. And Director Gibson can give you the rationale behind that space disposal action. But other than that, there's not sort of a wholesale disposal or a significant consolidation effort. What you see in the FY27, and fortunately we have Director Pannone also if you'd like to get into it further, but suffice it to say that right now that consolidation of facilities is not what folks have been sort of saying, that we're going to take things and consolidate. It's movement of personnel to different areas as part of this getting teams into some of the regional areas and modifying some of the hubs. So, but Kubota is that one exception that we would point out if you'd like more information.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And some of the questions that I originally had, Mr. Mills has answered, and I think that I'll let the, as far as like the restructuring go, how that would apply to this department, I think I'll let the rest of the presentation go because I kind of would like to know what's going to change as far as daily operations, but a lot of those questions might be answered as we move forward, so just want to get that on the record. I want to ask those questions.
And, I put myself in the queue as well here on this list of square footage. Are these public facilities that DOT's public facilities is responsible for managing, or is this just, help me break down that number a little bit for each of those departments?
Yeah, for the record, Danny Gibson. Madam Chair, the graph on the, or the list on the right on the slide there is the occupied square footage by department in our DFS and our PBF buildings. So those are only buildings that are DOT owned and operated. And as I said, that makes up 38 facilities. And that's the square footage breakdown.
I apologize for not reading that. It says it right there. Okay, thank you for that answer. We're going to take a very brief at ease.
We are back on the record with House Transportation Committee, and I'm just taking over for my co-chair as she just steps out to do a bill presentation. So is there any more questions before we move on? Please proceed.
Thanks for the record, Danny Gibson. My last point on this slide I did want to iterate is within our 706 buildings, that does not include AMHS facilities or international airport facilities. Those are strategic assets of the department and are maintained and operated independently.
Thank you, Director Gibson, and thank you again, co-chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christopher Hodgen, and thank you for the opportunity and privilege. So as we transition to deferred maintenance, the current present backlog of deferred maintenance in these facilities that we've been presenting to you is approximately $373 million. This comprises approximately $210 million estimated from our 12 public building facility buildings and $163 million estimated from our DOTPF usage and DFS buildings. So the prior appropriations that have been allocated in the past are depicted on these graphs. So on the bottom left, these are for our DFS and DOT programmatic buildings. If you look at the average, it comes out to approximately a little bit less than $4 million per year. And then on the bottom right, that graph depicts the allocations per year for the public building facilities. And then if you think about the average, that comes out to about a little bit less than $5 million per year. So those are the historical allocations, and we use those allocations to effectuate the projects in our deferred maintenance projects. We help inform these deferred maintenance backlogs by doing facility condition assessments. So we did recent facility condition assessments at 28 of our facilities, and those were used to understand the needs at each particular facility and understand the long-term retrofits and the long-term improvements that those facility needed. The results from those recent facility condition estimates showed us, you know, 5-year needs of like over $200 million for those 28 particular facilities. So this year we're doing more facility assessments. We're going to do facility assessments at more than 1 million square feet. And so we're going to use the information from those assessments to help inform us even more. The results from those assessments are put into our computerized maintenance management system. So they're stored there, so that we can actively look at the deficiencies that have been reported for each of those facilities, and then plans can be made moving forward after that. After we know those particular deficiencies, then we can go into the process of prioritizing what those needs are. So the way that our department does it and the way that the state of Alaska does it is our department presents those top facility deferred maintenance needs to the State of Alaska Facilities Council. So the State Facilities Council is comprised of facility representatives from each executive branch agency that owns buildings. So these projects are presented to the council, then they are rated and ranked, and the Facility Council presents that final ranked and prioritized list to the Office of Management Budget for allocations in the future. The specific methodology of the ranking includes different parameters, including the Mission Alignment Index of the facility, the system of the facility being improved, and the need of the facility. So,
yes. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On the previous slide, I had a quick question as I was just looking at that. Yeah. So it says that these are recent assessments performed based on these standards. So as you evaluate, you know, your entire portfolio, is that basically your assessment that they're fair? It's like that's kind of it. That's like as you evaluate everything, you're saying that we're middle of the road.
Through the co-chair, thank you very much for the question, Representative Nelson. On a gross, like high-level average, yes, there are fluctuations below fair and above. Thank you.
Thank you.
Once the Facilities Council has made their recommendation on the prioritized projects, again, those are presented to the Office of Management Budget for the allocation of any deferred maintenance funding that is available. For our buildings that are within our public building fund, like Director Gibson was talking before, we internally are able to rank and prioritize those. And so then we prioritize those projects and then submit those to the Office of Management and Budget for allocation.
I had a question about this, how you prioritize these different projects. So I assume you use some kind of rubric or some kind of scoring process to rank these. Is that correct?
Yeah. Through the co-chair, thank you. Yes, sir, that is correct. So we do a rubric. There are a few different important factors are included. We create a project index value that comprises the mission alignment index of the facility, the system factor of the facility being improved, and then the urgency, the need. So each of those is assigned a numerical value to get a sum of the project index value that is ranked, that is summed. So you get the facilities, the projects with the highest project index value are ranked up top.
And then as a follow-up, do you based on the funds you have available, do you just start at the top and fund down till you we're out of money? Is that how you do that, then?
Through the co-chair, yes, that's correct. Okay. Exactly. Yes.
Thank you. Can you tell me what percent of projects are completed every year, approximately? And the reason I ask that is I know in Education Committee we've talked about education facilities, some of which are state, I believe. Mm-hmm. But there's a ranking process, but very few of those projects end up having funds. So seems like 90%, 95% of the deferred maintenance issues are addressed because of funding. What percent are you seeing that are funded every year?
Thank you, Co-Chair. May I? I had that number off the top of my mind earlier as we were doing an annual report, but I want to make sure I get you the accurate information. If you would allow me, I can get that to you after the committee.
Yeah, certainly. That's sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So no matter how the projects are funded, they will either be completed through a design and construction effort, or we'll effectuate them through our internal forces with our maintenance and operations team. And so these are just some examples of this is actually the last cycle of the State Facilities Council that we presented projects at. So these are our department projects that were ranked and prioritized in the State Facilities Council. Not all of these ranked to the top, but these are what we presented. They included the Sitka Court and Office Building roof replacement, which did rank high, and some generator replacements at the Chandelier Camp and our Sag River Maintenance Station, some roof replacements at our Pega Road campus, Ketchikan Court and Office Building chiller replacements, overhead door replacements throughout some of our South Coast stations, including our Western Village snow removal and equipment building locations, and some boiler replacements at our South Coast facilities. All very, very typical deferred maintenance projects and items that need to be taken care of. And just an example of some of our recent completed projects, including a variety of buildings, our two combined facility septic system, HVAC upgrades at our Valdez combined facilities, HVAC upgrades at our state equipment fleet shop, and some other sewer line upgrades. And one project that I liked was a siding replacement at our ADAC station, which was a far project but was very, very interesting. And then including Accutan station and some asbestos removal and some other station upgrades. And in our public building fund, some recent completed projects include, we completed the roofing replacement at our Alaska Office Building roof in Anchorage here, our Juno 2nd and Gold parking structure repairs, and then some other projects in our Fairbanks Regional Office Building. And ones that are in current process, which are across the state. The current in progress projects include our public building fund projects, in Anchorage, that the Atwood Building in Juneau, our state office building, parking garage, Ketchikan, and even more remote-like locations, Chilitna, Taslina, Healy and Nanana, roofing replacements at those maintenance stations, and Yakutat and Livengood. So very, very broad range of projects spread throughout the state. But we also, in addition to using our design and construction team, we've made great strides using our internal forces that Director Gibson will talk about next.
Yeah, thank you, Christopher. For the record, Danny Gibson. it's no secret that there's a little bit of a gap between our hefty DM backlogs and available state capital funds. So as a division in 2025, we made the decision to undertake an internal effort to identify and reprioritize critical infrastructure needs, directing limited resources toward projects that stabilized essential facilities and extended the life of key assets statewide. During a period of tight operating budgets and limited capital funding, we focused on targeted in-house work where the greatest operational benefit could be achieved. We focused on the growth and development of our strike teams, our roving strike teams, whose schedule flexibility, diverse skill sets, and statewide availability made it possible to complete major facility repairs and upgrades efficiently. Now, sometimes, as Christopher Hodgins mentioned, this might be a delivery of a capital-funded project, and in many cases, this is delivery of services plus within our operating budget and using our operating resources. Some examples of this strategy in action was earlier this year, we did a renovation at the Thompson Pass bunkhouse. That's just outside of Valdez, where our DFS crew completed upgrades to all 10 bedrooms. We constructed a new living room and installed a fully updated kitchen, as well as painting the interior and exterior of the building. So for relatively low-cost goods, we focused our efforts of personnel to get a lot done to protect assets. Another example is the Haynes Maintenance Shop, where we completed a comprehensive interior and exterior revitalization that included installing a new roof, adding insulation to improve energy efficiency, rebuilding a deteriorated structural wall, and repainting the entire facility inside and out. We've also been to the North Bay Shop to start similar efforts, and we're currently scheduled to be in Valdez soon, as well as Ketchikan, to deliver equal services. We're continuing to identify and schedule opportunities for our roving strike teams to continue to positively affect the condition of our facilities and the workplace of those working within them, as DFS continues to deliver, improve, and maintain safe and reliable facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for our two presenters? Director Gibson, I had a question. So you mentioned the strike teams, and this sounds like this is a roving deferred maintenance group, and it sounds like it's a new initiative in 2025, and it sounds like it's worked. It's improved your ability to do some of this deferred maintenance. So the question I have is, what model did you use before, and why has this strike team model worked better in your estimation?
You know, I would say the northern region has always had roving teams that have delivered similar, usually supporting capital projects. However, DFS, we really made the decision to, because we look at things from a statewide level and not necessarily a regional level, is implementing those similar actions across all of our portfolio. So that's where we're starting to see now, where something was being done in one region well is now being executed. We can send our personnel anywhere, including our northern region folks, going down to Ketchikan and crossing those what once were regional boundaries and managed separately now are being managed together in one unit.
Okay. Thank you for that. This this is really interesting for me to hear because, again, in education, one of my colleagues had an idea to essentially kind of create something similar to the strike team, and hearing your experience that it has worked well has kind of given me some things to talk about with that colleague. Some folks might be asking you about this model, and good idea.
Give all the REAA schools to them.
Yes.
$9 billion worth of maintenance.
Be careful what you wish for, right? Are there any further questions for our presenters? Okay. Director Gibson, Chief Hodgkin, just thank you so much for your presentation. Thank you for your good work and your service to the state of Alaska, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Hope nobody gets pinched.
People do listen to us. Okay, so the next House Transportation Committee meeting will be Thursday, March 19th at 1 p.m. We'll be hearing about pre-construction. With no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 1:43 p.m.